Welcome to the Point Forward podcast with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's J.R. Radcliffe and Jim Ozarski, an over-caffeinated Milwaukee Bucks conversation.
Hello, everybody. We missed you. We are back with the Point Forward podcast, Milwaukee Bucks chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. It's been a long time, friends. We're back. Bucks have played a couple preseason games already. They've had their sort of mini camp out in California and now in Irvine. Now we see what's going on as we get a lot closer to the season. That begins October 23rd. The Bucks will get the regular season going on the road. They'll be at home a couple days after that. Let's talk all about it. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. I'm joined by Jim Ozarski, Bucks reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Jim, you've had some time to absorb what this Bucks team is going to look like. We had a media day where we met some of the new guys, DeLon Wright, Taurean Prince, Gary Trent Jr. specifically. They've had this camp out in Irvine, California, and a couple of preseason games, both losses, but obviously the win-loss, not the most important thing. You've seen these rookies in action. So I'm just going to throw it to you right off the top. LeBron James, despite his dissatisfaction with flying to Milwaukee, they were in Milwaukee on Thursday night, the Lakers, a lot of starters against starters action. You don't normally get that in the preseason. What are your takeaways so far? What are some of the things you've seen in these first two preseason games that you made particular note of?
Yeah, I mean, look, it was Giannis's first time in a Bucks uniform since April 9th, right? So no ill effects of the Olympics, looked like his usual self. We didn't see a ton of two-man action in the time that he played with Damian Lillard, who went off the court briefly, kind of tweaked an ankle. Doc Rivers said, hey, we wouldn't have put him back in if it was an issue, but we'll see how that, you know, plays out over the next week, few days here. So Giannis looks good. It's funny because you, JR, I think I took more from the Detroit game when Giannis didn't play because you saw more of a five wide setup, essentially, with everyone spaced out. Paint is wide open. Damian Lillard using pick and roll or picks off Brooke Lopez to get in and create. Obviously, they shot 27 threes in the first half. Giannis returns. They shoot 16 threes all game, or like when the starters are in the first half. Obviously, Giannis takes 18 shots in 20 minutes. I don't know if that's ideal usage going forward or just Giannis saying, all right, it's my first game. I'm going to try to get going here. But he looked good. And I will say, though, with Giannis, what was encouraging was movement from him. And what I mean by that is, you know, Bobby Portis is hot, makes his first four threes. The Lakers close out on him. He's got to put the ball on the floor. There's Giannis cutting to the basket for a Bobby Portis assist and a dunk, right? There's Giannis cutting hard on an inbound play, sort of surprising the Lakers. There's no one around. Easy dunk. Look, we know Giannis is fast. Talk about this, JR, last year about the Bucks' athleticism. It's him for the most part. But he's not really like an off-the-ball runner, you know? We see his lobs with Chris Middleton, but he's not really a guy that's like sprinting, you know, if he doesn't have the ball in his hand. So I think that's been an emphasis. To see to that a little bit against the Lakers was good. But other than that, I mean, Doc has said they've really resisted putting in a lot of offense since Chris can't participate yet. And I think that's interesting, JR, just going forward, how we've all, or the national media, been so focused on Dame Giannis. The Bucks have been pretty consistent with, we need Chris. Like, it's got to be the three of them together to figure this out, which, I mean, is good. So I think there's more to be seen, ideally, if Chris can play, you know, tonight against Chicago and at the end of the week against Dallas.
Yeah, we're going to talk more about Dame Giannis anyway. I realize, let's go in a little bit on Chris. Even the suggestion that he could play in preseason games, I have to think, is very, very encouraging. You know, my antenna is up. When this is an old roster, that is no secret. I think if they won the finals, they would be the oldest starting five. I was doing some number crunching and looked at the last 15 years. Nobody's won the finals with a starting five. Guessing Gary Trent over Bobby Portis, or gets even older with a starting five this old, but. you know, some, and so when the injuries are brought up, you know, when Damian Lillard, even if he leaves briefly in this second preseason game with a toe thing, it's like, oh, here we go. You know, Gary Trent Jr. of all people gets injured in the first game. Oh, here we go. But then of course, Dame came back. Gary Trent Jr. played in the second game. It's probably not as bad as I think about it. Chris's injury is the big one though. So I'm guessing everybody's pretty confident. I know they don't love to talk about detail with him, but it seems like if he's even a possibility for some of these preseason games that people should be pretty comfortable about where they stand, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think between Mike Budenholzer, Adrian Griffin, and Doc Rivers, Doc is more apt to give us a little more when it comes to what Chris is doing.
Yes.
So look, at the very beginning, I mean, even John Horst on Media Day was pretty insistent Chris is healthy. He just wasn't going to start with 5-on-5 action yet. And then Doc updated us before the Lakers game saying Chris is at 3-on-3. And as you listen to this and watch this podcast, he hopefully has done 4-on-4 over the weekend and into 5-on-5. And then that would set him up for some play against Chicago and or Dallas. Look, if he's medically cleared, like JR, when I covered the Packers, you know, and there's always the questionable or the doubtful, whatever. Like, if they're medically cleared, the guys are going to play regardless of the circumstance that led to that. And I think it is important. Dame, Giannis, Chris played a lot together under Adrian Griffin. We know that that was weird. They didn't play together a lot under Doc Rivers.
Right.
And so they have to figure that out. And honestly, the only way to do that is to play together. And that means, yes, potentially some preseason games, or maybe even Chris not being, if he's going to be on a minutes restriction to start the year, they might not stagger it, right, JR? Like these lineups that we might see only two of the three or one of the three together late, they might have to just make them, the three of them, play together, right? And then just the bench units kind of have to, you know, for themselves to a degree. So we'll see. But I think it sounds promising for Chris.
One of the more interesting aspects I found of Media Day was Giannis and Dame talking about their relationship a little bit. We all, I think, saw and gathered that it wasn't a perfect fit, even toward the end of the season. But for the first time, you heard them talk about it, how I think they were talking about the Indiana series in the postseason, where they kind of were alone in the locker room, both injured, both looking at each other and saying, you know, we've got to get on the same page, essentially. I'm paraphrasing. Those aren't the exact words, but that's the first time I think it really, I really heard them sort of, any one of them sort of acknowledge, yeah, it didn't really work the way we thought it was going to work. And so then you have this offseason, and that's kind of the big thing coming into the year. They've got this whole camp with Doc Rivers. Everybody's together. Everybody's healthy, and they can finally gel. Well, then, you know, Giannis had a very busy offseason. He had the Olympics. He got married. Like, that's the way it goes. Dame goes home, as any player should. These guys didn't work together in the offseason, and they've been communicating, and that's great. But, you know, presumably they were communicating last year too, and also playing together. I don't know if that struck you a certain way, if you're like, well, are we sure that this offseason is going to bring them together? And we'll get into this training camp situation in California too. But what do you think of their relationship at this point? Do you feel good about it? Do you feel like they are going to discover something in year two?
I can only go by what I know, or what at least what they say, because that's relationship share. Like, if you tell me about your relationship with Benny Buckets and Ben Steele, like, I'm just going to have to believe, like I'm going to have to believe you unless I see otherwise. Like, that's it's an interpersonal thing.
Of course.
I haven't had a chance to talk to Giannis directly about this, but spending time with Damian in Portland, and then a little bit of what he said on Media Day. The talking to them, or at least for Damian, has been more important this summer and even in this camp. And what I mean by that is pick and roll is pick and roll.
Yeah.
Lobs are lobs. Reading a defense or a double team is reading a defense and a double team. What these guys didn't know about each other, didn't understand about each other, were the superstar factor. In Portland, maybe a teammate could tell Dame what they liked or saw something, but are you really telling Damian Lillard what to do or how to be. In Milwaukee, we've seen Chris challenge Giannis, right? The famous, like, on the table in Miami yelling at each other in a huddle, right? And then he immediately go do their lob dunk. We've seen Brooke yell at Giannis on a defensive assignment. But in and that's fair. That's accountability and leadership and trust. But, like, when it comes to the offense, are you really telling Giannis what to do when he pulls the ball off the glass and is going to go dunk on four guys? No. So where I'm going with that, JR, is I think it just took time for them to figure out how to speak to one another as the Wolves, right? They're two Wolves. Like, they're just – that's who they are. Giannis isn't going to – he might have said he was going to screen 50 times a game, but we knew that was bogus. we knew, you know – Dame was going to defer, and if he only scored 6 points a game, come on. Like, he's a Hall of Famer. He'll change the game with Steph Curry. Like, that's not acceptable for him either. So they had to, like, actually work that out as shared alphas in a group. And I think that is communication. I think that is just, this is what I need from you and when or why. And it's not a challenge to you. It's not an affront. It's not a criticism of your game or anything like that. And that's a two-way street here between the both of them. So I think the communication matters. And JR, you rewind it back. Yeah, Giannis and Dame FaceTimed in the years past. They've spoken on the bus at All-Star games. But that's not like talking
right,
as no. teammates and being sort of together in a locker room setting. And so Dame shows up the first day of camp. Okay. And then Terry Stotts quits, and then the whole Adrian Griffin thing. Like, it just, I don't think anything was set up for that to be fostered, encouraged, mandated, whatever, from the top down and left to figure it out. Meanwhile, Dame's kind of hurt because of the summer. He's hurt, like, emotionally and personally.
He's missing his family.
Yeah. So I think, they're not excuses, JR. And Dame even said that. He's like, no one feels bad for us. But I think the reasons, and I think going forward, Dame and Giannis throwing lobs and doing ghost stuff with Donovan Ham and Jack Harum and, you know, whatever, and some gym in Portland or Greece, like, is fine. It's good. But I think it's that talking part. And as Doc even said it before the Lakers game, he's like, we haven't even really put in their two-man stuff yet. We're just sort of, you know, getting them. And he's like, the fact they're doing some of it already without actually putting it in, he said, it's such a huge step in their on-court relationship. And I do, JR, think it has everything to do with the off-court stuff they talked about.
All right, so Doc Rivers brought them out to Irvine, California. It seems like everybody was really enjoyed that experience, appreciative of sort of this time. You know, it's basically a retreat, you know, away from any potential distraction, I guess, or any, you know, just a chance to foster some of that communication that you're talking about. I think it was, I personally maybe cynically think, hey, Doc Rivers brought him out to his home, you know, like, I don't have to go anywhere. It's great. He's not sending the LeBron tweet. Why am I getting on a plane to Milwaukee when I can just have everybody come to me?
Right.
Of course, they all took the plane from Media Day to Irvine, so it's not quite the same. It seems like that was a good experience, and I don't know if they had anything to say about it. I think Bobby Portis was talking about the good vibes that sort of, you know, originated from that. So, like, give me a sense of what you think that did for this team, if that different look was somehow, you know, was extra valuable this year.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a great segue off of the Dame Giannis relationship stuff, where it has little to do with the basketball. And Doc Rivers said, you know, getting this team connected together was goal number one. It wasn't anything basketball wise. And so, yeah, they're out in Irvine for six days before going to Detroit. They had a mentalist and or illusionist come in to break things up on a lively fashion. They have Rajon Rondo come in.
Yeah.
Yell at them quite a bit and then do a breakdown in a film session. Chris Middleton took a group to SpaceX. Damian and Giannis led gatherings as well. There was a team golf outing at the resort they were at. So along with dinners and all the things that, you know, you would just sort of expect to happen around practice and when you're kind of sequestered. And yeah, like Bobby Portis did say that. He said that the start of season vibe atmosphere is the best it's been in years, he said, plural, which makes sense, I think. I mean, he's probably going back. He's probably thinking the title defense year. I didn't ask him specifically, like, what year? But you could probably guess, considering what's happened after that. So, you know, I think it has and it did impact and help these guys, especially as a veteran group, JR. They all kind of went to that place. If you think about it, aside from the very – not that young players can't have families, but with this specific team, all of the younger players, as far as I know, don't have children and families in Milwaukee to attend to. So, you know, they all said that, like, hey, if we're here, we have to go home and, like, do stuff with our significant others, our partners, our kids, etc. And it's kind of easier to just, like, you know, compress that bond a little bit when you don't have anything else to do but hang out with one another. So, yeah, JR, I think, I mean, we'll see. If there's a parade, you know, in June, they can all look back at how great that was. But we'll see if, you know, if there's a three-game losing streak, if guys get hurt and have to step into roles or whatever it may be, if guys will do a callback to this start to say, hey, this is, you know, the foundation of, you know, us getting through, you know, an 82 game schedule.
Yeah. There's a parade in June. Of course, all of it worked out great. Yeah. that's feeling more and more like a long shot. If you consult national media, if you look at the GM survey or whatever, there's still appreciation for Giannis as he heads into, you know, he's going to turn 30 in December. So I guess we're certainly past the midway point of what you'd expect his elite career to be, but he's still a force of nature. Damian Lillard, I'm sure, still has respect around the league, but he's not showing up among the list of the best point guards in the NBA. This team isn't, I don't get the sense right now that people expect them to be a top four team in the East, that they might be, you know, on the road in the first round of the playoffs if things go as people project them to. Now, I think I know why. It's because the last couple of years they haven't gotten out of the first round, and, you know, they're old. We said that before. Like, it's those big three, and obviously Brooke and Bobby and a couple of the new guys will contribute, but there's nothing new to say, well, this year they're going to do this that they couldn't do the last couple of years when they were bounced in the first round. I don't think that thing exists. So what do you think of this sort of ennui? You're always very high on this Bucks team, particularly as they match up with Boston. You can read about your thoughts there at jsonline.com if you'd like. But the rest of the world has kind of moved on from the Milwaukee Bucks. Yeah, I think they're a little bit of an afterthought. give me your thoughts on that.
Yeah, it's wild. So, you know, I had mentioned the three newcomers to Giannis and sort of a more complete roster and about getting back to a conference finals. And he looked at me, he's like, we got to get out of the first round.
He's right.
So they've earned that. And while they haven't been healthy, and that is a true statement, that's the fact. As Chris Middleton said in Indianapolis, we weren't a good enough team to overcome the injuries they faced. And perhaps it's a little deferential to say you didn't have enough to overcome. No Giannis, Dame on one leg, Chris with two broken ankles. I don't know, like, literally, I don't know who could have been there to help, but
right. That
said, they've earned it. And you're right, I have been high on them, JR. And I will argue I have yet to been proven wrong.
Sure.
In that, when healthy, they pounded the Celtics last year. They had the number two seed clearly in hand and we're going to win more than 50 games until Giannis gets hurt in the last week of the regular season and Dame strains his Achilles in the last game of the regular season. They were the one seed the year Mike Budenholzer was fired. So they're a good team. I think it's more to your point, JR, of the national thought is they're over it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're kind of back to being the boring Bucks. And if we go back to the prime Budenholzer era, aside from the 18-19 explosion, right? They were just sort of like, no controversies, no weird quotes, no whatever.
No podcasts.
Right. No podcasts. They were just sort of there. And Bobby referenced that. He's like, no one talks about us. We're just us, boring, you know? And I think it's easy to forget just how sort of insanely odd and roller coastery last year was. To see NBA GMs put them as the fifth seed is interesting, particularly since the Knicks acquired a player 2 days before training camp, mm-hmm. and the Bucks literally lived that, and you saw how difficult that could be. The 76ers literally signed 13 new players. I think Joel Embiid and Tyrese Maxey were the only guys on the roster when free agency began. that in and of itself, I think, would be NBA history should they even advance out of the second round, which Joel Embiid has never done in his career. The Cavs have a new coach again. Last year, first year head coaches with teams, they should be good. But is that a championship team? The math says no. And the Pacers, credit, they made the Eastern Conference Finals. We'll see what the second year brings with that. So I this goes actually to an ESPN story, JR, where they ranked like the best players and Giannis wasn't even in their top five.
Yeah.
He's right. Also receiving votes. That's like stunning to me, JR. Like he's the only, and I just come off as such a Homer beat guy, but I'm only saying facts. Like he's the only player in NBA history to average 30 points a game on 60% shooting. Not Kareem, not Wilt, not George Mikan. It's a one of one situation.
Uh-oh, someone's at the door. Someone at the door.
So she can't believe it. I don't quite understand how that sort of just waved away. Like he did that in 75 games, JR. This isn't a 40 game sample size.
No.
So is it truly just, well, no one has seen him in the playoffs the last 2 years?
I think that's it.
So it's just an interesting thing to me that they're just so widely dismissed, and maybe it's more of a Doc thing. Maybe GMs don't think Doc is going to get the most out of the group. Maybe to our Giannis Dane conversation, maybe GMs feel they are just two types of stars that should work, but really aren't. I don't know. We'll find out. But yeah. I do think that they're undervalued, underplayed. I do think that sentiment will be changed by the new year. I think we'll be talking about a pretty good Bucks record early in the season, and then all of a sudden it's, hey,
our Bucks are here again.
It's shocking, it's exciting, and
Doc Rivers, coach of the year.
Bucks fans can look back at this conversation and be like, I mean, should it be as surprising as maybe as it might be positioned in a couple months?
Yeah. I mean, I think, and you said at the very beginning, though, they have to stay healthy for all of this to come true. And that's a long shot. I mean, unfortunately, it is a long shot.
They've earned that. Yeah. They've earned that, unfortunately.
Yeah. Tell me more about Doc Rivers, because you've had some time now. You've seen part of an offseason with him, and it was such a rugged, you know, like quick, yeah, what's the word I'm looking for? Marriage between Doc and this organization. Mid-season last year, first year coach Adrian Griffin not making it through January. I would imagine that I would imagine just about anybody can be head coach of the Milwaukee Bucks when you have this many veterans and this many quality players. But he brings a certain prestige and also the baggage. How good of a fit is he? I mean, have you seen enough to think you can gather whether or not he is the right person to lead the Bucks forward?
I mean, I said this when he was hired. I think he's the right person in that he's a wildly successful winning basketball coach. I mean, he's in the top five all-time wins. Mm-hmm. He's won 60 games twice, 50 plus on, I think, 10 occasions. We all obviously know the two finals trips. You know, it's that is what it is. And you mentioned, like, anyone could coach the Bucks, and I don't mean to be so flip as to say, like, Adrian Griffin was 31-13 with this team. And it was clearly like if it wasn't broken, it was not together, and mm-hmm. how good they were, right? So you know, I think the answer to that is the playoffs, right? And I think, again, to the Bucks stars being unhealthy, they've earned the skepticism since the title. Doc's teams have earned the skepticism, right? The 3-1 leads. I mean, even going back to one of those Orlando teams, right? Like, his squads have earned that. And so they both have to overcome recent history. I do think he's the right guy for the job, though, because some of this is just so obvious. And I think doing the obvious with such high-end talent can garner high-end results. And the obvious being, let's get these three superstars. And Chris is a Milwaukee superstar, right? Yeah. I think he's earned that here. He's right. Get those three guys together and understanding what they need to do and how they need to operate. Brooke Lopez, at his age and skill set, should stay around the rim. Can he do some other things in a pinch? Sure. But let's keep Brooke around the rim. And then if he's not there, let's make sure Giannis is around the rim. Like, that's a good thing defensively. Oh, let's, from the John Horst perspective, let's stop signing 35-year-old guys. Let's give Doc a DeLon Wright and a Gary Trent, guys who can shoot threes but deflect some basketballs and maybe give you a little more athleticism on the perimeter to help with Chris and Dame to get to those bigs around the rim. So, again, it sounds obvious. The last year, probably we didn't see a lot of that. We did see it a couple years ago with Bud, and they were the one seed. It's so easy to forget, right, JR?
It is.
Like, they were the one seed. And it's just Kevin Love undercuts Giannis, Chris's knee goes out, and, like, it is what it is. But they're not that far removed from stomping through the East. Like, they decided to win the East, so they did. And I think another thing to put a pin in is, on Media Day, Doc Rivers used the word dominant. And it was in context of, like, load management and minutes management with the Stars. And he was like, well, there's things to figure out, but we want to be dominant. So I am curious, JR, if we're going to see an emphasis to smash people again. We've seen that in a couple Bucks iterations, right? 18-19, mm-hmm. the truncated bubble season 2 years ago. You know, so let's see on that. But I do think, I know you asked about Doc, and I think Doc can get that out of this team. But again, once we get to spring, then they'll have to kind of earn new respect to sort of counteract, obviously, the skepticism they've garnered and quite frankly earned the last few years.
I just thought back to this joke I made after 2021. It would have been after that, but you know how Monty Williams visited the Bucks locker room after the Bucks beat the Suns, and the joke being, oh, was he maybe making a play for his next opportunity? Because this was after Coach Bud had been fired, and then Monty Williams also ended up leaving Phoenix. Like, oh, he was one of the names, and now not only is he in Detroit somewhere else, but Mike Budenholzer is now the one in Phoenix, right. leading the Suns. Oh man, if only you could have seen the twists and turns it was going to be making at that point in 2021. Very very surprising for a few years to follow.
Yeah.
The new guys. I want to talk about them a little bit. What I am still, it's still too young for me to be able to say, it's still too new for me to be able to say which one I think is going to be the big time contributor. I think Gary Trent Jr. maybe is, he's probably going to be a starter. Yeah. So of these three, Taurean Prince, DeLon Wright, Gary Trent Jr., which one do you think is going to make the biggest impact? Or maybe they're all going to be making kind of a similar level impact. These aren't just depth guys. I feel like these guys are going to be major contributors at points this season. Is that unfair to say?
No, I think, you know, it is fair to say. And you've got Gary Trent Jr. as your starting shooting guard. So just by sheer volume, JR, he'll be the most impactful player. But Torian Prince said he's a power forward with this Bucks team currently when they're all healthy. And what that means is he will be either part of the small lineup if Giannis is the center. Maybe he subs in for Giannis if Bobby subs in for Brooke. And while that's still small, because Bobby's not that type of rim protector, but Torian has said he's a four here, which and at his size, he offers a little bit. Like, he was guarding LeBron, for instance, against the Lakers. You'll see that.
Former teammate last year.
Delon Wright looks forward to playing with Dame, but it's pretty clear he's the backup point guard
for sure
in that way, and it's kind of a defensive stopper. But yeah, if Bobby's clearly the sixth man,
yes,
and then Torian Prince, Delon Wright to me are 7-8. So yeah, this is not depth. This is like, those are the
rotation, you know, guys,
20 minutes a game, somewhere in there, right? Depending how things go. But I do think Trent Jr. is the piece for several reasons. He's an ascending player. He's just in his mid-20s. Kind of like Bobby back in 2020, JR, except that Gary has more of a track record of being an 18-point-a-game scorer and a 40% three. Like, Bobby doing what he's done in Milwaukee was sort of a surprise. Like, they got him, as he's told us, you know, his career was kind of on an edge there. Gary's the other way. Gary's a guy who kind of got squeezed with this new CBA and this new marketplace.
Yeah.
And sort of fell here. I think Gary is, all shooting guards have career shooting seasons when they play next to Giannis. I expect that to happen for Gary Trent Jr. because he is a marksman. He's already close to a 40% three-point shooter. That's only going to get better, and his looks are only going to be better. He's familiar playing with and around Damian in the backcourt. And I think that's a big deal because he just inherently knows Damian's space. And we spent so much time talking about the big three. Giannis is easy to play around if you're a shooter, because it's just go over there. Damian is a little more, is different. His space starts like 35 feet out. And so Gary just knowing that, I think, is going to help. he's a guy who I think we mentioned, let's say the big three, Chris has got to go out. Maybe Chris is going to miss a game. Maybe Damian's going to miss a game. Like, Gary can go get you 25. He can create his own shot. They haven't had that, JR, since in the backcourt.
Not in the current iteration of the
Bucks. It's been a while. Right. Yeah. Since the emergence of Chris Giannis, like, to have a two that could just like go get it if he needs to. And then Prince and Wright bring that defensive element, steady 3-point shooters, enough of a sample size in their careers to kind of know what they're going to do with open looks at this point. So, yeah, I think all three are going to matter. All three are heavy rotation guys, playoff rotation guys. And, you know, we'll just see how they're sort of used lineup wise, combination wise. And I think it might take Doc a little bit to figure that out, right? Who fits with whom and when. Yeah. But I think I said this on one of our last pods. I think it was John Horst's best free agent summer since 20. You know, it was very targeted, very specific. I think they fit very specific things. And, you know, it's up to Doc Rivers to make sure that all works.
Eric Bledsoe doesn't count really, right? I mean,
I think. I guess on track record,
yes.
You know, coming to Milwaukee and like what he had done prior to, probably fits that, right? Yeah, like he was a 20-point a game scorer in Phoenix. Like, that's a real thing. He just maybe wasn't the 3-point shooter. He was sort of
not at all.
You know, so that's, I guess, the difference. So Bled's probably the best comp, and obviously he had to change his game once he got to Milwaukee, became all defense. I would say Bled, but even then, JR, he was 28, 29 when he got to Milwaukee, whereas mm-hmm. Gary
very young,
hitting that prime time. Yeah.
Yeah. 4 years younger than Bobby Portis, which blows my mind, because I still think of Bobby Portis as one of the young guys, and he is relative to everybody else,
right?
But he ain't far from 30 either. So, So you kind of laid out what the rotation is. A lot of guys that I think realistically the Bucks can count on. Who else needs to rise up for this team to be good? And I don't mean like a Marjan situation where Marjan needs to rise up so that he can keep his career going. More like, are the Bucks counting on AJ Green? Are the Bucks counting maybe on Marjan? Certainly, I don't think any of the like rookies will fit this bill. So is there anyone else that really that you've spotlighted, like the Bucks need this guy this year?
Yeah. So I'm going to go with a combo of Pat Connaughton and AJ Green. And one of them's got to shoot 39% from three.
Yeah.
Maybe that's unfair. 38% from three.
We're splitting hairs, but okay. Yes.
Yeah.
Effective.
So look, Pat in the championship year and then the next year, 37%, 39%. And then I think he was shooting really well until he broke his finger on his shooting hand, you know, in Phoenix a couple of years ago, and then didn't quite recover last year. So his shooting is his decline the last couple of years. AJ Green clearly is the young guy that Doc Rivers trusts, that he likes, right? We saw that last year. We're seeing that early here in this preseason, but AJ's got to do it. AJ's got to make threes with more people around him. He's earned that respect from defenses where he's going to have to make some contested off the catch, off platform threes. We've seen him do a lot, but not in that sort of role. So I think one of those two need to make high value, high percentage threes, JR, because DeLon Wright and Taurean Prince, obviously Giannis may only shoot a handful of threes again this year. You just need that, right? If Bobby is back to the form of a couple years ago, but like he's still not that kind of three-point shooter. So you need one of those two guys. And then I think whoever's doing that is going to fill out that ninth sort of rotation spot. And maybe Doc just plays a hot hand. Obviously, Pat's a little more athletic still, I think, than AJ. Although maybe some people would disagree with me breaking it down. We'll see if Pat's healthy, you know. And AJ thinks that a little underrated defensively for what he can do. So, and then Andre Jackson Jr., I think, is going to still be that sort of defensive pest, spark plug, physical kind of guy.
The Nets, with maybe a little more upside, right? Like a little.
Yeah. Obviously not as I mean, Andre gets loud. Like he's an exuberant player.
Right. He's not a WWE personality.
Right. But I think it's Pat and AJ just for the 3-point shooting in that ninth spot, at least ninth and 10th, I guess. And then, you know, Andre, if he makes threes, that's a bonus for this team, but with any Doc and some of the cutting and back cut actions and rim running, like Andre finishes like a 6'10 guy, so maybe there's some specialty cuts and lob actions for him that can kind of get fans going type of thing at home. But yeah, I think it's the 3-point shooting, JR. And then after that, I think it's, you know, blowout games, rest games, injury games where the rest of the guys kind of, you know, fill in minutes.
Yeah, here's how I've come to think of Andre Jackson, and for that matter their two draft picks, AJ Johnson and Tyler Smith. It's going to be very difficult to keep all these names straight. Just the common last name thing going on is very difficult for me. I feel like they're lottery tickets at this point. The Bucks don't have, in my mind, the Bucks don't have maybe a concrete plan for how those guys are going to be acclimated over the next couple of years and where they're going to fit. It's more like, here's some kids that are really young or really raw, and we'll develop them alongside these superstar veterans. And maybe one of them breaks through and becomes a really important piece of the next generation of Milwaukee Bucks teams. Obviously, if they had their druthers, they would all be that. But that's kind of how I've come to view it. You know, when you see AJ Johnson get overwhelmed in that first preseason game, it's like, oh boy. I mean, you have to remind yourself how young he is, how inexperienced he is. Tell me if that's an unfair way to look at this, or if you think there is a broader sort of framework in place for what they expect out of Andre too. Andre is obviously ahead of them, but for really all three of those guys.
Yeah, I do think AJ Johnson, Tyler Smith, Chris Livingston are those lottery tickets, if you will. Because, I mean, Chris Livingston just turned 20.
Yeah.
AJ Johnson is a teenager for another couple months. Tyler Smith, I think, is still a teenager. If not, he just turned 20. It's fair. Like the track record of draft picks under John Horst that stay with the team is not great.
No.
I mean, Dante's DiVincenzo's the best. You know, it is, has Marjan. Look, Marjan is interesting because he's played about 50 games his first 2 years, largely to fill in for an injured Chris, an injured Pat, an injured Joe Ingles. Like, he's, it's sort of been a fill-in spot. And though, to his credit, his three-point shot is so much better than it was. I mean, to go from 33% to 40 in a year is all credit to him for that.
Yeah.
But I think clearly this third coach in JR, it's not ideal, but I also think he's just, he hasn't in those opportunities built enough equity to be the ninth man, right? To have Pat been a $9 million 12th man. Like, I think on a team like this, you've got to take that. They're not going to give it to you. So Marjan, I think, is in this sort of gray area. So to your other three, I wonder if having, look, the Bucks have said, we want them around our vets. We want them to learn. We want them to be around. But then they don't play.
Right.
And veteran teams don't practice. And so what are they really getting out of playing play groups with the coaches, the player development staff, and, you know, a couple of the rostered guys? Like, if it were me, John Horst might listen to this because I know he listens, I'm sure.
Really?
And call me up and yell at me for
this. Come on the pod.
But, like, to me, if there's any crossover with the herd, AJ Johnson, Tyler Smith, and Chris Livingston need to be at Oshkosh. They need to start every game. They need to play 30 minutes. And truly learn how to play basketball. And you hire Ben Oudra as the head coach. You have to trust that group. And then you have your two-way guys, whoever they may be throughout the year, as sort of your blowout game fillers. You know, and I know those guys can only play, you know, 50 games, and there'll be enough crossover. I just think having learning at practice and learning by sitting, I don't know if that works. I think we all see JR, like, young guys got to play, and I realize it's not the NBA, but you can't tell me AJ Johnson is going to be better because he sat for 10 straight days when he could have played 5 herd games. So we'll see. We'll see what they do. We'll see if they change how they've done some of this stuff in the last few years. But they are lottery tickets because I think without, as we record this, they don't have a draft pick next year, first or second round.
Right.
So they kind of have to be, like, I guess, a double draft pick, if or does that make sense or whatever? Like, they've got to actually turn into something to a degree in the next couple of years, just because that's just the constraints they're in with the moves they made, JR. So
it is legitimately difficult to picture how the Bucks will even fill out a roster after Giannis is gone, whenever that might be. And, you know, maybe they win a title. That's
your problem.
I know. And of course it is. Of course it is. You don't worry about that now. Of course that's true. But say they win a title. I mean, maybe Giannis legitimately finishes his career in Milwaukee. Like, maybe there's another whole decade of Giannis. And maybe, you know, maybe Dame is here for the next 6-7 years. I mean, like, there's possibilities, I guess, where you don't actually have to find that bridge group between whatever comes after. Anything else? What else have we not discussed? Darvin Ham is back as an assistant coach. Yeah. I guess we could talk about that, but anything else jump to mind?
Look, I mean, Darvin, I think, contributes to the vibes. I mean, Bobby, especially if Bobby feels that way, like, I think Bobby and Darvin really connected, you know, in that year or two. And I think that's a big deal for Bobby feeling good. We'll see. Look, Giannis is working with Vin Baker and different coaches. Drew Hanlon, the noted independent skills coach. Went to Greece. He's been in Milwaukee. He's going to be doing some check-ins on Giannis's game. Obviously, that has changed. We'll see what that is, you know, after so many years of talking about Josh Oppenheimer.
I know. I can't believe he's not here anymore. I can't believe he's not here.
So I think those are all sort of underlying, not sort of forefront things, but maybe contributes to the overall vibes and chemistry things that you know, we can look back on later to see, oh, those things mattered. I think for now, it's just, especially what we've seen, we haven't seen a whole lot on the court. They continue to say full schemes and calls aren't in. They can do those things in a couple of weeks. It's not football. Most basketball sets are the same from high school to the pros. They just call them different things. Maybe there's little wrinkles. So it's not like that complicated. So I wouldn't, if you're a Bucks fan, worry about that when Doc says, oh, we haven't put in any plays yet. I don't think that matters. Really, it's I think let's see where Chris is at and whether he's on a restriction or not. It's just how often do those three play together, and then how quickly does it look good? Because Doc Rivers said dominant, and I think you can only hold guys to what they say. And I am interested to see how they like what that looks like, what that means, as you know. The season starts here in like a week and a half.
Hey, one last question. PJ Tucker's out there. Is this roster finished? Are we sure this is a finished product?
I mean, all I'm going to say is PJ Tucker makes $11.5 million. And under second apron rules, if the Bucks were to somehow trade for PJ Tucker, they would have to offload Bobby Portis or Giannis or Dame or Chris or Brooke. No, 39-year-old PJ Tucker will not be traded for. If the Clippers decide to buy him out and he becomes a veteran free agent, all I'll say is I'm sure PJ Tucker will not be working for anyone in the NBA until the spring or the winter. I love PJ. I just think that's if teams wanted him, he'd be somewhere else. So yep. I guess anything is possible after the trade deadline, JR, but I wouldn't make that bet. I saw something that said the Bucks are like the betting favorite or whatever.
Somebody posted that. The PJ Tucker sweepstakes.
Don't get in on the sweepstakes at this point. That's not a thing. I don't think PJ Tucker, Milwaukee legend though.
Oh, he can still, he'll drink for free here for as long as he wants. So if he wants to come hang, he's not a winter guy. So he's running out of time.
No, but he's not a winter guy. Yeah.
maybe in May. Who knows? All right. He is Jim Ozarski, Bucks beat reporter covering the Milwaukee Bucks for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. You can find everything he has, jsonline.com. He's ramping up. We got lots to discuss, some preseason stuff, the games themselves, a look ahead, things of that nature. So check all that out at jsonline.com. Thank you, Jim. We will chat very soon. We got some preseason predictions to make before this all gets going, October 23rd. So we will be back before then for sure. We'll see you then.
Thank you for listening to the Point Forward podcast, a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and jsonline.com production.